It's my honor to begin this series of talks on the harmony of Zen and Vipassana. This week, I'll give the morning 7 a.m. talks like today. And next 2 weeks, my good friends and wonderful teachers from San Francisco Zen Center, Fu Schrader, the abbess of Green Gulch Zen Center, and Paul Haller, former abbot of San Francisco Zen Center in the city, will give the talks. And so I've been involved in both these wonderful traditions, and traditions I have tremendous respect for, and I celebrate their great value, and I feel very fortunate to have done both. I think they, in myself, have mutually supported each other in all kinds of ways. So to have a chance to talk about the meeting of these two or the harmony of these two is a wonderful exercise for me. Sometimes I think of Zen and Vipassana as being their meeting is kind of like a Venn diagram, like two circles that overlap some places. And in some teachings, some teachers might both be positioned in their mutual circle in the place where the two circles overlap. And so they seem very similar and very similar teachings. And some might be sitting on opposite sides of the circles so that they don't overlap or share much. And how big that those Venn circles are, how much big that overlap is, I don't know. Maybe it depends on who's defining it. But there's certainly overlap. But where there's not overlap, there can be harmony, there can be complementarity, there can be ways in which understanding one helps to understand the other. There's a wonderful, for me, a wonderful saying that I learned when I was in England, that said that if you don't leave England, you don't really know England. And grew up there, I suppose, if you leave and then come back, you see it in different ways. So sometimes being outside of a particular religious tradition for a while that we've been immersed in helps us to see with clearer eyes something we were missing before. And one of those things can be to understand even better the value of the tradition. So one of the kind of wonderful maybe coincidences of language is that the word Zen comes from the Chinese word Chan, which comes from the Sanskrit word Jhana, and it's just a different language pronouncing the same word. And in Pali, the jhana is jhana, which is states of concentration, the practice of concentration. Vipassana comes from the ancient Pali word for insight. And this also, especially here in the modern West, but a little bit in India and in modern times, the word vipassana no longer simply meant the insights that come from practicing mindfulness, but became the name for a technique of meditation practice, the mindfulness technique, in a sense, and then became a word that began to encompass the full teachings and culture and religion of people practicing Vipassana. And so we have this very odd thing or new thing that happened here, especially in the United States, I think, starting, I don't know how many decades ago, but maybe 3 decades ago or so, we started seeing in the West this expression, the Vipassana tradition. And then there were sometimes meetings or references to the three traditions, Zen, Tibetan, and Vipassana. As if these were... And so I was a little surprised to see Vipassana was now a tradition when it's a relatively new word to refer to a school of meditation. But the wonderfulness of it is that, you know, on one hand we have, in the ancient world, vipassana, the insights of meditation, were supported by jhana, supported by deep concentration. And the teachings of the Buddha, the ancient teachings, these two came in harmony. They worked together. They were partners. And then over time, as Buddhism developed in India, China, Japan, Sri Lanka, Burma, Thailand, and kind of in different ways, meditation remained a constant in some way, one way or the other. There's different countries where they practice Buddhism. And there were people and lineages and schools that really emphasized meditation. And Zen and Vipassana are two of them. And once you talk about sitting in meditation, practicing in meditation, there's a lot of overlap to what human beings experience in meditation. Most people, when they sit down to meditate, discover very quickly how out of control their mind is, how much they're thinking and all that, and how many obstacles there are to being really present. And so learning and developing capacity to be present is very much the same no matter what meditation one's doing. We're developing our capacity not to be distracted, not to be lost from our present moment experience. And as we do that, then we become more settled, more calm, which is more the concentration factor. But as we become more settled and more calm, we start seeing more clearly what our experience is, which is the insight, the vipassana side of it. And these go back and forth. As we become calmer, maybe we see better. As we see better, we can become calmer or more settled or more present, whatever the language we have. So coincidentally then, these two big traditions, so-called, Vipassana and Zen, are named after these two ancient aspects of meditation that in the ancient world were harmonious, were connected to each other quite closely. And so the general way, there's two ways of practicing Vipassana. One is directed attention, and the other is undirected attention. And be interesting to hear from the Zen teachers if the same distinction can be made in Zen. When I first start practicing Zen meditation, I was told to direct my attention on the breathing and to count the breaths. And I did that for years, and it was a wonderful practice for me. And when I went to Burma, they seemingly did the same thing. They went to told me to now focus. In Zen, they often had an emphasis on feeling the movements of the belly as the breathing happened, the hara. And in Burma, they put the attention in the same place where the hara area, and to feel the movements there. So this was very familiar to me. It's the same directed attention as I did in Zen. But what happens with Vipassana practice is that the practice begins to be directed, and then as it goes along, it becomes more undirected. And so we'll see that in the course of this 5 days that I'm be teaching here, that the way that we've come to teach Vipassana, many of us, insight practice, mindfulness in the West, we start with directed practice, and then we begin to opening up the attention to include more and more in the awareness. So we begin with the breathing, and the breathing is a wonderful place to calm down, to relax, to step out of the thinking mind, to see how much we're caught in thought, and then come back. And then we'll go to body, to emotions, to thinking, and then Friday I'll give you a little taste, or a little pointer to the undirected attention of Vipassana, which maybe is similar to what in Zen they call just sitting, or shikantaza. And in Vipassana, there's often a kind of a sequential or a step-by-step kind of approach to settling in and arriving to this undirected attention. And so we begin with mindfulness of breathing. And I'd like to do a little teaching around this briefly. And that is, if we're practicing attention to breathing, mindfulness of breathing and meditation, it works when it doesn't work in this way, that it works if we're able to stay, our attention stays stable and connected and continuous with the rhythm and flow of breathing in and breathing out. And as we do that, sometimes because the attention is no longer going into thinking, the thinking mind gets quieter and stiller, and then things open up in a nice way. But plenty of times, our ability to stay with the breathing doesn't work. And then it's like this. When many years ago, I was up in the mountains here in the Santa Cruz Mountains, sitting in the edge of a creek, and it seemed like the creek, the water was not flowing at all. It was completely still. And so then I took a stick from the shore and put it into the river, into the creek, vertically. And then I could see there was a little wake formed on the surface of the water where the stick went into the water. And then I could see that the water wasn't still. There was a current that was flowing. So the same way, mindfulness of breathing is like the stick we put into the current of our lives. And we get to see more clearly how strong that current is, especially like the current of thinking or the current of feelings that we might have. And so it isn't necessarily we're supposed to stay with the breath and criticize ourselves where we can't. But they just keep showing up for the breath, then highlights what it is that is really flowing and moving. Oh, look at that. My mind is really busy. It was busier and more actively involved in thinking than I realized, or I'm more interested in food than I ever could have imagined. It's all I think about. And that's the beginning of mindfulness, to see clearly what's going on. And the more clearly we can see, the more choice we have about where do we really want our attention to be. Do we want our attention to be hijacked by our neurosis, by our preoccupations? Or do we want our attention to be something that really enlivens us, embodies us, really kind of brings out a freedom of life that I would like to think of as simplicity. The simplicity of just being alive and letting life, the lived life, flow through us. So thank you. And I look forward to having this chance with you tomorrow morning. And for those of you in the intensive, there'll be a more formal welcome and introduction to this the intensive program at our 10 o'clock program this morning later. And I look forward to seeing you, the intensive folks there then. Thank you.